This message comes from NPR sponsor Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, whose scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute is changing lives everywhere. DanaFarber.org/everywhere.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. This week on the show, NPR reporters Vanessa Romo and Alina Selyuk. All right, let's start the show.
Yes.
Yeah, right?
That is all I have to say about the beginning of the song.
Hey, y'all, from NPR, I'm Sam Sanders. It's been a minute. I'm broadcasting from NPR West in Culver City, California, still in my running shorts. But my two guests today are at NPR headquarters in D.C. Hello to both of you.
Hey, Sam.
I wish I was wearing running shorts.
Alina Selyuk covers tech for NPR. Vanessa Romo covers just about everything for NPR's breaking news blog, The Two-Way. I'm glad you guys are here today.
This is my second time, and
okay.
I cannot believe it.
Me too. I'm a two-timer.
We should start a spinoff and call it It's Been 2 Minutes. It will be great.
I'm down with that.
Guys,
our fourth guest today on the show is Miss Britney Spears. You hear that song?
Oh, yeah.
A colleague of ours pointed out this week, his name is Danny Nett. On Twitter, he tweeted this week that this song, Britney Spears' Oops, I Did It Again, turned 18 years old this week.
Oh, that is so painful.
Right?
No.
You know what, though? But it gave me a chance to just play this song all week, and I thoroughly enjoyed
it. It's one of the best.
And this song itself was written by a songwriter named Max Martin. He's this Swedish pop writer supreme who has written hits for everyone for like the last 20 years.
His story is amazing.
Right?
People should read about it. He's written pretty much anything, like every year in top 40.
Wow, I had no idea.
He's still making hits. There's this wonderful book that basically outlines the way that Swedish songwriters took over American pop music. It's called The Song Machine, Inside the Hit Factory by a guy named John Seabrook. Totally fascinating. Max Martin, thank you. Britney Spears, thank you. So Vanessa and Alina and Britney are here with me to look back on the week of news, culture, and everything else. Let's get into it, guys. We're each going to describe how this week of news felt in only three words. Alina, you're going to go first.
So my three words are the long shadow. And
whoa.
That is, it's dark, but what it really kind of has come to mean to me is this feeling of constant repetition that's in the news. I don't follow the news like super closely. I'm kind of living in my own bubble of tech and retail these days. But every time I read the news, it just seems like the same themes pop up over and over. And specifically
which themes?
This week. So, for instance, the nuclear threat from North Korea
that
looms over so many different trade negotiations, for example, with South Korea that the U.S. has been having. The North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, visited China this week on this like stealth trip that wasn't so stealth after all.
Yeah.
And that was a major conversation there. So that's one theme. And then another theme is, of course, the poisoning of the former Russian spy, the double agent in London. And now we're seeing reactions and then reactions to reactions. The U.S. is ousting Russian diplomats. The European countries are ousting Russian diplomats. Now Russia is ousting Western and American diplomats. And it just seems like these ripples of the same story keep coming out. And the third story I want to mention goes even further back, which is Ferguson. The ripples of that that we're seeing.
Talking about the Michael Brown case in Ferguson?
Exactly. But also, the fact that we're still talking about police brutality and police shootings.
With Stephon Clark.
Stephon Clark.
For those who might not know, what's that case about?
So this week, there are massive protests in Sacramento about shooting of Stephon Clark, who is an unarmed black man, 22 years old, was shot by police in the backyard of his grandparents after a report of a suspicious man allegedly breaking windows in the neighborhood. The cops turned up, and this is what ended up happening. It's just like this perpetual story.
Oh, yeah. And with all of those things that you bring up, there seems to be no resolution in sight. I mean, even thinking about North Korea, we have seen North Korea's leader really show some true acumen. He is making himself seem like a statesman on the level of other leaders by what he's doing with these things like his China visit.
And I think at this point, there's a conversation about President Trump meeting with the leader of North Korea and South Korea, with the leaders of both North Korea and South Korea. And China, I don't know that China is involved in that meeting, but they're definitely involved from the outside.
Yeah, yeah. Vanessa, you got three words?
I do. They are, you were saying... So I have been writing a lot about Stormy Daniels, the former porn star who alleged having an affair with President Trump, and also Karen McDougal, the former Playboy playmate, who has also said that she had a 10-month-long love affair with Trump. So you were saying, because we've been hearing a lot in the last week from both of these women.
Yeah.
And Trump, who is well known for his love of Twitter, right? And like wastes no time in taking to Twitter to express his feelings on anything, on Coke, on Pepsi, on people's weight, on anything else.
Yeah.
He has not tweeted about Stormy Daniels or Karen McDougal at all. In fact, the New York Times ran this great story earlier this week where they counted that since he's been commander in chief, Trump has tweeted 2,900 times. 2,900 times, and not one of those mentioned Stormy Daniels or Karen McDougal. So I thought
by
that
name.
Was really by name, yes.
And of course, we have to point out that the White House has continually denied all of these affairs.
I have to say, though, this is also another example of a story that has a shockingly long shadow to me, even in this news cycle where things kind of blip and go away.
And I think that's very intentional by both Stormy Daniels' team and even Karen McDougal's team.
Oh, yeah, they're smart. They know how to keep this stuff in the news.
Right. And the thing that Michael Cohen and now his lawyers and then Trump's other lawyers all want is to force all of these cases back into arbitration, right? So they can remain sealed behind closed doors, out of the public eye, so no one will know what's happening. And the thing that Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal really want is to force this out into the public.
Gotcha. I have three words, you guys.
Let's hear them.
Hold them hostage. And usually I try to use my three words to connect the dots between multiple stories, but this week I was just really obsessed with one. This Atlanta cyber attack. I think you've covered this, Vanessa, right?
Yeah, I just wrote a big, giant story about it and talked to a ton of people who have been affected by the same thing. I mean, it's everywhere. It's school districts, law enforcement, hospitals. It's really terrifying.
So basically, this week, some cyber attackers laid siege to Atlanta's government data. They threatened to wipe all of the city of Atlanta's computers totally clean unless they got a ransom payment of about $51,000 in Bitcoin. When I saw that figure, I was like, y'all, dream bigger. You only want $51,000. Anyway, I digress. So they shut down.
Wait. But it's $51,000 per a hard drive. It's total?
No, total. They're asking for, I think, 6 Bitcoin, which amounts to about $51,000 at the moment.
Yeah.
Also, Sam, I should say, they didn't threaten to wipe out all of their computers. It's just some computers.
But the ones that were affected were crazy. So the Atlanta court can't see cases. Residents can't pay their utility bills online. Police officers are writing reports and booking inmates
by hand.
And this has been going on all week. There's no Wi-Fi at the Atlanta airport. It's bananas. So then on top of that, these cyber attackers have a website, a ransom website, basically saying, Atlanta, you can pay us here. It was secret. But then midway through the week, a local TV station in Atlanta tweeted out the link and shared it. And then that website for the ransom payment was overloaded with randos posting stuff. And then they had to take the ransom website down.
Yes, they said they got too much spam.
What is going on, Atlanta? So what's happening now with it, Vanessa? What's the latest?
So the latest is we actually don't know. We don't know if Atlanta has decided to pay off the attackers, because that's actually something that people do. I mean, just last month, the city of Leeds in Alabama, they had a similar ransomware attack where the hackers were asking for $12,000. And they were
why are they aiming so low?
Yes, across the board, they're not asking for loads and loads of money. I mean, there is another case that I also wrote about. There was a case in Buffalo, New York, a hospital there. The hackers threatened them with $30,000. They were trying to extort them for 30,000. $30,000. The hospital said, no way, no thank you. So what happened? They were shut down for 6 weeks. And in the end, it cost them $10 million to recover all of their data. So in a lot of cases, it just behooves you to pay the money and just get on with it.
Although I'm pretty sure that sort of like the federal guidelines or the directions from the investigators will be pretty clear to not
the engage. FBI, the FBI has a gremlins kind of policy, which is like, don't feed them after midnight and don't get them wet, right? So they basically say, when you pay these hackers, it just encourages them to do this again. And then, and you never know, this could, the money could be going to a really illicit purpose, some illicit activity.
Yeah.
So don't do it. Of course, they understand that it's sometimes in the better interest of a city, of a school district, of a hospital.
To just get it over with.
To just get it over with.
Yeah. Well, before someone hacks this show, we're going to go to a break. Coming up, we're going to talk about whether there's any real possibility that the government starts to regulate big companies like Facebook. And also, we will talk to a teacher in Oklahoma because teachers there might be striking because they haven't had a raise in 10 years. All right, this is It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Discover Card. You check your email or social media all the time, but Discover asks, what about checking something as important as your credit score? Well, Discover makes it quick and easy with their credit scorecard, which is free for everyone, even if you're not a customer. See your FICO credit score and other important credit information. And once you know your score, you should check to see if your current credit card is the best fit for you. Learn more at discover.com/creditscorecard. Limitations apply. Support for NPR and the following message come from Netflix, presenting the film Paradox. Daryl Hannah's debut feature-length film builds on the success of her short that won a jury prize at the Berlin Film Festival in 1993. Starring Neil Young, Micah Nelson, and Lucas Nelson, Paradox is Hannah's personal expression of music and love. Paradox is now available to stream on Netflix.
When C.C. Wong met his mom's new tenant, he never suspected he'd end up getting replaced as a son, or that his replacement might have sinister motives. This week, Invisibilia looks at the things we don't say to our loved ones and the misunderstandings it can lead to. Listen on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders, here with two guests who will tell you who they are.
I'm Alina Selyuk, and I'm a business reporter at NPR.
I'm Vanessa Romo, and I cover breaking news.
Awesome. So, you guys, before we get back into the news, I have a question for you about a weird thing I saw this week on the internet.
Which one?
First, do you tell?
Right? Yeah. So, there is a new condiment option in the world this week. Sliceable ketchup. Did you guys see this?
What? Sliceable ketchup.
It is ketchup that you can, like, layer on a sandwich like a piece of cheese.
Because it's, like,
NBC
gelatinous?
Said of it, so the slice, quote, resembles a thin piece of fruit leather, is made from vine-ripened tomato puree, distilled vinegar, cane sugar, kosher salt, onion, and garlic powders, and fruit pectin. The company making this, they're called Bose Original Slice of Sauce. Their whole argument is this makes ketchup less messy. So my question for you guys, would you use that?
I am so grossed out right now. No way. Also, get it together, people for whom it's too ketchup is too messy.
How messy is your regular ketchup habit that you
it
need?
It can be messy. So then what condiment would you guys change if you could?
I would go for a leathery honey layer.
I am so impressed by how quickly you came up with that because it's a genius idea.
It bothers me. I think the honey bear is out to get me every time.
It's so slow in coming out of the thing.
And there you go.
Yeah.
They should have asked me.
You guys, we'll talk more about ketchup later, but now it's time for a segment that we call Long Distance. We call someone out in the country or the world, and we ask them about what's going on in their neck of the woods. So, you guys, this week, I wanted to call a teacher in Oklahoma because Oklahoma teachers might strike beginning on Monday. This comes after teachers in West Virginia striked for a pay raise earlier this year. So in Oklahoma, teachers make about $38,000 a year. They want a pay raise. There was a bill that passed and was signed this week in Oklahoma that raises their pay by about $6,000 on average per teacher. But as of Friday, when we're taping this, the teachers say it's not enough yet. The largest teachers union in the state of Oklahoma, they're calling for a walkout on Monday. So that's the background. I called up a teacher in Tulsa, Oklahoma. She's a first grade teacher with Tulsa Public Schools. Her name is Manya Brown. We caught her on her lunch break. Let's listen. Hey, Manya.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, well, you know, physically fine.
Okay.
Mentally, it's just, you know, everything is kind of up in the air, you know, having a hard time focusing and doing my job with all this that's going on.
So the latest, it seems, the State House in Oklahoma passed a bill, and the bill was signed that would put up, what, like over $400 million to give teachers like you a pay raise.
Uh-huh.
But that's still, what, like a fraction of what you guys want, right?
It's a fraction of what we want, you know, and it is a start. We are acknowledging that. And I don't want to say we, because I'm definitely speaking for myself. Mm-hmm. I am acknowledging that. However, it needs to be taken a little bit more seriously. It's not exactly what we as a whole are asking for.
What do your first graders think about all of this? Do they know what's going on?
They don't really know what's going on. I hear them talk. They say
You in your car?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Are you driving somewhere?
On my lunch break.
Okay. Are you safe to drive and be on the phone right now?
Oh, I'm with another teacher, so I'm in the passenger seat.
Okay. All right.
You need us to pull over?
No, but that said, if you're going to be where you're going in like 5 minutes, we can just call you back in five.
Uh-huh.
You want to do that?
Sure.
Okay, we'll call you back in 5 minutes.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Hey, you still there, Manya?
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for that. Sorry we had to have you.
No, that's okay. I just, you know, it's just the life of a teacher. Always going.
Always moving. Yeah, I understand. So if I got this down correctly, you only make, as a teacher teaching first grade, you only make $38,000 a year. How does that work out? How hard is it to make ends meet with that much money a year?
You know, it's very hard. I find myself always just juggling bills. What should I pay this month? What can hold off? Can I call this place and see if I can get an extension? Maybe you're getting my gas cut off or having.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of us spend money on students. I know extra snacks, you know,
yeah.
And that kind of thing. It adds up, and you don't really think about it until
the gas about to get cut off.
Right.
Yeah. You have a spouse and, what, two kids?
Mm-hmm.
How old are your kids?
They're 11. We're getting ready to be 11 and 5.
So what does your husband do?
My husband, he works at American Airlines.
Okay.
And he has a second job as well.
Really? What's his second job?
His second job, he cleans buildings.
Okay.
And so, you know, one of my goals, and I was just talking with some colleagues yesterday, is, you know, I want to be able to make a little bit of extra money so that he can stay at home with our family.
Mm. If I did the math correctly, mm-hmm. this new bill that was just signed, the mm-hmm. raise that it gives a teacher like yourself making what you make, it'll be about $400 extra a month after taxes.
Mm-hmm.
How would that change things for you? $400 extra in your pocket every month. Would it allow your husband to lose that second job? Would there be concrete changes from that much money?
I mean, I don't really think it will.
Really?
I may be able to put a little extra on utilities, maybe,
huh.
or for my own kids. You know, maybe not shopping at Goodwill to get the uniforms. Maybe we'll go. And get uniforms at Old Navy or, you know, something like that. It'll be a little bit, but it won't be a significant change is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I know that you were telling me earlier that there's been a wide level of support across the state for what teachers like you were trying to do. But have you heard any criticism of a potential teacher strike? And if so, what is that criticism and, like, what does it sound like?
I haven't hardly heard anything, to be honest with you. I went into Family Dollar because I coupon. He had a misconception. I forgot about this, but you're bringing it back to my thoughts. So he,
you mean a guy that works there at the store?
Uh-huh. So he said, you teachers, you know, you're off in the summer and you this and all of this kind of stuff. And I asked him, I said, well, if you don't mind me asking, how much money do you make? And he's an assistant manager at Family Dollar. And he told me he made $52,000 last year.
That's more than you.
I know. So now when I go in, he's at my neighborhood Family Dollar, and I say, I call him 52, so we have a running joke now. And so he's like, I didn't know. I said, exactly. And so no one knows. I don't see how you guys do it. I don't see how you do it. That's, you know, the consensus of, oh, I couldn't teach. I couldn't do it. So don't beat us down, because this is what we like to do.
Yeah. What salary for you personally would make you satisfied?
I believe that teachers should start at least at $50,000.
Okay. Do you think that the state will get there? Because right now the raise they signed doesn't take you there.
And I get that. And notice I said start. So, you know, that's if you're a first-year teacher and that's your first year. So what I'm saying is these are steps that we're trying to get there. You know, years from now, hopefully, we're going to be competitive, and we're going to get those colleges recruits that want to come to Oklahoma and teach, and students have all the resources that they need, and they don't have to share test books, and that's what we want. That's what we're striving for.
Yeah. Besides getting ready for a strike on Monday, what are your plans for the weekend? Anything fun planned?
Well, you know, just time with family, Easter egg hunting, and getting ready for church on Sunday, and, you know, just normal, what everyone else pretty much does.
Okay.
And then we'll see what happens when we wake up on Monday.
All right. I thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate talking with you, and you're being open with your story. And I hope you and your kids have a wonderful Easter.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right.
Bye.
Special thanks to listener Liz Beard. She's also a teacher in Tulsa. She helped us find Manya. All right, so back in the studio with Vanessa and Alina. That call was so interesting to me, you guys, because, like, even for her to take 10 minutes to talk to me, she was, like, working. You hear her moving boxes around. You hear her driving with her teacher friends somewhere else. We assume that people in certain professions are just doing well because they went to school and that's that.
Right.
She's making less than her local Dollar General assistant manager.
I wish, and I don't know how this could ever happen, but I wish people could have honest conversations about salaries. And maybe not on an individual basis, but sort of on a professional basis, just within your community. Because I think in that circumstance, it sounded like the dollar manager really had his eyes opened to the reality of another person about whom he made assumptions earlier.
Exactly. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders, here with two guests today, Vanessa Romo, who covers breaking news for NPR's two-way blog, and Alina Selyuk, who covers tech and retail for NPR, both of them joining me from D.C. Hey there, hey there, hey there.
Hi.
Hey, Sam.
So it's time for our main story of the week. I want to talk about Facebook. You know, we've been hearing nonstop now for the last 2 weeks or so all about Facebook and its ties to this kind of shady data firm, Cambridge Analytica. That's the firm that used Facebook data from like 50 million people to possibly influence the 2016 election. Since this has come to light, big tech is under fire. Mark Zuckerberg, who leads Facebook, might actually testify in front of Congress. He's also said that he may be open to Congress and the federal government regulating his company, which is a new development. So my big question for us today is, are we as a country ready to regulate big tech? And if so, what does that look like? Alina, you've been covering this issue for some time.
Mm-hmm.
What does regulation of a company like Facebook look like, and where is it happening? From what I can tell right now, the place where that is happening is Europe.
Europe. Well, in the U.S., it doesn't look like anything.
Okay.
It doesn't exist right now. But in the next few weeks, on May 25th, a new law goes into effect in Europe, and it's called the General Data Protection Regulation. And that law essentially will tell companies that if you have users in one of our 28 EU countries, mm-hmm. you have to get affirmative consent for mm-hmm. any data collection. So they have to get opt-in very explicit from the users.
So basically, if you start on a social media company, the default is that like nothing is really shared unless you say yes to it?
Unless specifically the user approves of you collecting that information to begin with.
Okay.
There's so many other things to that law. There's also what's known as the right to be forgotten, which is this permission for people to ask internet companies to remove certain content about them. The popular version of that is the Google search results. If some Google search result about you harms you, you can petition Google to remove it from the search results. And this will be enshrined into law come May in Europe. Another one is minors under 16 will have to get parental permission to even access websites like Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram. And the final one is the companies will get 3 days to disclose any kind of data breach. So this is the most kind of specific and targeted oversight.
Yeah.
That the companies have ever faced. And all of this comes with massive fines attached to potential violations.
So all of that is about to happen in Europe. We're probably not going to see that here. But we mm-hmm. have seen some efforts to regulate privacy and data before, and it hasn't gone so successfully. I'm talking about the Obama administration trying to regulate data and internet service providers, right?
Yeah, so we're having this kind of interesting dichotomy in the U.S., which is that internet companies, like your social media companies, are not regulated by pretty much any government body, except for the FTC, which is not a preemptive kind of mm-hmm. Authority. What we do have is the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, which does oversee some parts of the broader internet community, specifically the internet providers, companies like telecom companies, right?
Like Comcast, AT&T, like where I get my internet from.
Exactly. And so I'm going to utter these words, net neutrality. And the net neutrality rules were passed by the Obama administration. Part of the net neutrality provisions kind of took the FCC down the path of trying to also write some privacy rules for the internet providers because they could. And so...
And also because I don't think most of us know, these internet providers also collect your data.
Right. And the Obama administration wrote these rules that would have required internet service providers to very specifically disclose what they're collecting, how they're using that data that they collect.
Did that go into effect?
No, because okay. lo and behold, it took a while for these rules to be written, la-da-da-da-da. The new Republican administration came in and essentially stopped the rules from going into effect.
So I had no idea that this was even happening. So Comcast or Xfinity or whatever, they know how often I visit my like bank account. They know how often I go to like madewell.com and order, you know, socks, sparkly socks from them. I mean, they're keeping track of all of this.
Also, sidebar, there's no Madewell for men, which sucks. like affordable J. Crew.
Oh, boohoo, things are hard for men. Just kidding.
There's a big difference between what the internet providers can see versus what like a Facebook or specifically Google can see. And they don't see a lot of the content. So like they might know that you go to Madewell, they might not know that you're buying socks. Actually, another element to all of this is that Facebook and Google also do track your presence on other websites. They have these little breadcrumbs that they plug across the internet. So when you go on a random website, there will be a little breadcrumb on that website that informs Facebook that you'd visited this website. Google also can see what you're chatting with people about or writing in emails.
This is the thing that's so terrifying to me.
So, like, Alina, my question is, what has Facebook changed since this scandal with Cambridge Analytica, if anything?
Right. So Facebook has been pushing this idea that they're really making big changes in response to this outcry of Cambridge Analytica. A lot of the changes already took place in 2015, sort of at the time. They stopped allowing Facebook information to be shared with third-party developers. They are now working on a transparency effort to show who funds the ads that you can see. this week they sort of rolled out new version of privacy settings that are supposed to make it even easier for you to go on and fix and match your own level of privacy to what Facebook has for you.
But I'm just I'm so skeptical, because we've heard apologies in the past, and we've heard these, you know, proclamations of, you know, mea culpa from Zuckerberg, and he promises that things will get better for users and they won't be abused or sold. And yet, you know, here we are again, right? So is this actually real?
There's this fundamental idea that's ingrained in the business model of Facebook and Google, which is different from most other companies, even the largest ones like Apple or Microsoft, which is that they make most of their money by selling our data. So this kind of philosophical question gets tossed around a lot. There's been a lot of think pieces about this, which is, who is the customer of Facebook?
The advertisers are the customers, and the
we are
the product.
The product.
This time feels different, though, because I feel like there are people in Congress talking about doing something, right? Like last week, a senator from Massachusetts, a Democrat, Ed Markey, he talked about like a privacy bill of rights.
That would guarantee that every American know when information is being gathered about them, know when that information is being reused for purposes other than which the consumer wanted it to be used. And third, and most importantly, they have a right to say no. It just be the law of the land, not just for Facebook, but for any of these online companies. This is the moment of reckoning.
Moment of reckoning. Do you buy that, Alina?
I kind of do. I don't know where it will take us. I think this is a moment that a lot of regular people can understand in terms of privacy conversations. Hmm. People feel very connected to their own personas online. There's a big push by some advocates to bring those European laws to the U.S., this kind of forceful opt-in requirement on internet companies. The FTC is investigating Facebook yet again.
Right.
So the outcome of that investigation may or may not come to light eventually, may or may not result in some kind of change. I find it really hard to imagine how Facebook pivots and changes their business model, as we talked about. This concept that their money comes from advertising, which relies on the data that it collects about you. So I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure this is this is like a peak and a valley. I don't know. I don't know.
I started off feeling like comforted by you, but then by the end, I'm still as scared as I was before this conversation started.
So basically, this story has legs. It won't go away. We'll probably check in with you again very soon, Alina, because the internet, more than ever, is a scary place.
On that dark note.
On that dark note, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll play a really fun, uplifting game called Who Said That? This is It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your home or office. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or package using your computer and printer, and the mail carrier picks it up. It's so convenient. For a 4-week trial, including postage and a digital scale, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in minute.
Sometimes the economy is kind of hard to understand, or, you know, not that exciting. But not on Planet Money. You can think of our show as a guide to business and the economy, except it's fun and exciting. Planet Money. Find us wherever you found this podcast.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders, here with two guests, Vanessa Romo and Alina Selyukh, both reporters for NPR, with me today.
Hi.
Hey there.
It is time, you guys, for my favorite game.
This is my redemption tour.
Wait, did you lose last time?
Oh, severely.
So the game is very simple. I share a quote from the week. You guys have to guess who said that, or at least get close. Guess the story. Guess a keyword. We're not sticklers here. The thing is, though, the winner gets absolutely nothing.
And the loser gets to come back again, right? Right?
Yes,
right?
Yes. You can always play again. This is the best game because of that reason. You guys ready?
Let's do this.
Sure.
All right. Here's the first quote. I really do love this one. Them little tweets don't faze me. McDonald's be so lazy. I know the reason you hating me, because I'm fast food's first lady.
It has to be Wendy's.
Yes!
I don't know the story, but it has to be Wendy's.
So Wendy's just released a mixtape full of a woman rapper, like, dissing McDonald's and Burger King. The songs are hilarious. The production is actually pretty top-notch. And there's one song off the mixtape, Rest in Grease, that is just hot fire. It's Queen Wendy up in this thing. Y'all can't beat a
serving of things. Y'all too chicken for this beef. I'ma leave you resting in Grease. I want to be in that corporate meeting where somebody says, God.
What was the casting process
for this?
I have no idea. This Wendy's mixtape hit number 3 on the iTunes hip-hop charts recently.
I'm not
surprised. It's for real.
There are no rules to anything anymore, right? I know I sound like a really old person saying that, but
it's
like
true.
Nothing means anything anymore.
Here's the thing. Yeah, there are no rules. There is just content.
Content.
Yeah.
Alina, you're up one. Time for the next quote. You ready?
Yes.
They joke that the president and Congress are all clowns. Well, in my professional opinion, they are the worst clowns I've ever seen. Who said that?
Some clown? Professional clown?
That's actually right. I'm just going to give it to you. This is a former clown named Steve Lau.
A no longer practicing clown?
No longer practicing clown. He used to work for Ringling Brothers Circus. Now he's running for Congress as a Democrat in South Carolina's 5th District. Can I tell you his website?
Yes.
His website is clownforcongress.com.
No.
Right? So we've been hearing for months now that there is this coming blue wave in the November midterms where all of these Dems and left folks who are energized are running for office, and the numbers apparently are astronomical. That's probably true because even the clowns are running for office.
So when he says they're all clowns, it's a good thing in his opinion. Because he's a clown for Congress? I mean, how does this add up?
You can go to clownforcongress.com and find
Learn all about it.
Okay. Learn all about it. Okay. Yeah.
And then Facebook will track it forever.
I will be advertised too. It's all good.
Ready for the last quote?
Yes.
Quote, I would like to thank my writers, all liberals. It has been fun to talk with you and jam. You are all wonderful. Who said that? It was a reboot of a thing that was very popular in the culture in the 90s. It
Roseanne.
Came back in a... Yeah, Vanessa,
I got one.
You got one. So Roseanne, her show came back to TV this week. The premiere was watched by about 18 million people.
Yeah, huge ratings.
Huge ratings. It was so big, Donald Trump called her to congratulate her because
right.
the whole premise of Roseanne this time is that they are a family of Trump supporters.
Or a divided family. They're
okay.
not all. Roseanne is a Trump supporter.
Yes.
I watched a little trailer.
Did you enjoy it?
You know what? I loved Roseanne when I was a kid.
I loved
that show. I thought it was like a really great show about like working class families and just kind of a great depiction of the way that normal people lived, which was a great contrast to everything else that was on TV at the time. And you know, yes, as you mentioned, Trump found the time to pick up the phone. And I think he may have also tweeted about it, which, you know.
Wow. So the game is over. Alina, I think you won.
How are we not talking about Beyonce yet?
Wait for it. This is our bonus quote. Okay. I was going to make one of the Who Said That quotes this week all about Beyonce, but you already know what that is. So we'll just give you a little bonus and say my favorite quote of the week was this. Quote, near the end of the party, Beyonce's at the bar. So I said to Beyonce, did she really bite you? That, of course, was Tiffany Haddish, my favorite comic of the moment. In a GQ profile, she describes this party scene in which an unnamed actress bites Beyonce, leading Tiffany to want to confront the actress and fight her. Beyonce says, no, don't do it, don't do it.
She's
but
on
since
drugs.
Since this has been revealed, we have all been trying to figure out, hashtag, who bit Beyonce?
Did you see what Tiffany had to say
yesterday
or a couple of days ago when she was asked about this one more time? Well, first she said, NDAs are real. Stop asking me about this.
Oh, wow.
And then proceeded to say that there are a lot more important things to worry about. For example, have you done your taxes yet? They're due real soon.
Tiffany, you know what, though? Tiffany, as much as I love her, she stepped in it. You can't bring that up and not expect the entire world.
It's unfair.
It's been great.
Listeners, if you know, let us know. I will tell you, though, no one's biting over here. But the clear winner of the game is Alina. You won who said that. Congratulations.
Yes.
How does it feel?
I feel redeemed.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Redeemed. She's glowing.
Well, you get that and nothing else because there is no prize.
That's all right.
Now it's time to end the show as we always do. We ask our listeners every week to share with us the best thing that happened to them all week. We encourage folks to brag. They do. Let's take a listen.
Hi, Sam. This is Tina calling from Michigan. And the best thing that happened to me this week is that I got my first flock of 25 baby chickens.
Wow.
25?
That's a lot.
Hey, Sam. This is Amy in San Diego. And the best thing that happened to me this week was marrying my boyfriend of 8 years on a beach in Belize.
Congrats.
My husband and I took 8 whole days off of work and went to Paris, France.
Amazing.
Wow. I ran my 16th half marathon today.
Congrats.
After 11 years, I submitted my PhD thesis to be examined.
Hey, Sam, this is Austin from Long Beach, California. Best thing that happened to me this week was I managed to get in as a VIP guest of Travis Barker. Whoa. At a Blink-182 show.
Amazing.
Blink-182.
Hi, Sam. This is Maya from Chennai, India. And the best thing that happened to me this week was that I graduated high school as the valedictorian.
Congratulations.
And I gave a speech that made a bunch of people cry.
Oh.
Hey, Sam. It's Joe from Greenfield, Mass. But right now I'm in Brooklyn, New York, because after many months of not getting any work as a makeup artist or makeup designer, I found out about a month ago I would be designing Jesus Christ Superstar live on NBC.
Wow.
And right now I am walking in, and we are doing camera tests.
Wow.
And yeah, it's been kind of incredible.
Good luck.
Congratulations, man.
Hi, Sam. This is Laura from Centerville, Utah. The best thing that happened to me this week was on Sunday when I got the results from my Ancestry DNA test. I was adopted at birth, and I have never connected with my birth family. And when I got my DNA results, I matched with a sister. And so I have been emailing with my birth sister for the beginning of this week, and it's been pretty awesome.
Oh,
so cool.
Amazing.
Hi, Sam. This is Pamela calling from Vermont. About a year ago, my 16-year-old daughter was diagnosed with cancer. And it was right around the time that your show started airing. And we have spent the year mainly in the hospital. And I've listened to every one of your shows since it started. The best thing that happened to me this week was my daughter is officially done with her chemotherapy treatments.
Good, good, good.
And cancer-free.
Oh, man, that's great news.
So I just wanted to say thanks for being there this year. And take care.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh,
congratulations.
Man.
Okay, thanks.
Have a great day, Sam.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks to all the voices you heard there. Tina with the 25 chickens.
Amy,
Kelsey, Christopher, Emily, Austin at the Blink 182 concert. Maya, congrats on being valedictorian. Joe, good luck with your show on NBC. Laura and Pamela, thank you for sharing that story. I'm so glad your daughter is cancer-free, and I am honored that we could be a part of your last year or so. We listen to all of these that come in, keep them coming, along with the dog picks, cat picks, and soon-to-be 25 chicken picks.
Can I throw in my brag?
Yeah.
My cat turned one, and I made him wear a tiny cape.
Oh,
it was wonderful.
Send us pictures.
He's Instagram famous.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You can always let us know the best parts of your week any week. Just email me at samsanders@npr.org. samsanders@npr.org. With that, a special thanks again to my guests for this show, Vanessa Romo and Alina Selyukh, two wonderful reporters at NPR. And as always and forever, special thanks to Britney Spears for giving us gems like these.
I'm so happy to be here this week for this.
I guess we can say at
this
point,
we did it again.
With this show. Right? This week, the show was produced by Brent Bachman and Anjali Sastry with some help from Tom Dreisbach. Our director of programming is Steve Nelson. And we were edited this week by Uri Berliner. Our big boss who signs the checks is Anya Grundman, NPR's VP of Programming. And before we go, got a quick correction from last week's episode. We talked about sanctuary cities and mentioned the town of Los Alamitos in California. Los Alamitos is not in Los Angeles County. It's actually in neighboring Orange County. Thanks to our attentive California listeners for pointing that out. Refresh your feed Tuesday morning. I have a chat with the Oscar-winning actor Tim Robbins. He has a new show on HBO called Here and Now. But we also talk about one of the best films of all time that he was in, The Shawshank Redemption. That'll be in your feed Tuesday morning. Also, I asked you last week, I'm going to ask you again, if you like this show, put a rating on the show. Go to iTunes, rate us. It just helps folks find it. Thanks for listening. Next week, we'll do it again. I'm Sam Sanders. Talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere. Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives, like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.